Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable competitive future in Cork business.
Hi there, and thanks very much for joining us on this episode. Will there be a chamber dinner this year? We're going to ask Conor Healy if the biggest event in the business calendar is going ahead in 2022, and why all of those Cork cows, soon to be out chewing away in the fields in the spring, are a vital part of our economy. But first up, on this episode, many businesses in Cork had to pivot online because of the pandemic, but it was a major incident of a different kind that prompted our next guest to shift into e-commerce nearly 4 years ago. He hasn't looked back since, and he's here now to tell us all about his journey. Executive Director at Regatta Ireland, Brian Fox, how are you?
I'm excellent, Jonathan. Thank you very much. Good to meet with you.
It's lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us. You've kept me dry on more than one occasion, Brian. I don't mind telling you that.
Oh, that's wonderful. To be fair, it's nice to hear stories from consumers and customers who've been in the shops. And you know what? We get a lot of repeat business, which is indicative of our product offering. Always nice to hear.
Tell us a little bit about where you are right now. We'll go to the history of the business in a minute. But you've got bricks and mortar stores still, don't you?
Oh, we do indeed. Yeah, that's wholesale is our starting point. To be fair, we wholesale product to existing sports stores, outdoor stores, and department stores. But yeah, we started our own retail venture a few years ago. I think about 2011, and we've got 27 branches now around the country, all doing very nice business, which is wonderful. I think we add an extra dimension to different communities around Ireland. And we have plans to roll out, you know, perhaps four more this year. So we take 3-4 per year where we find good sites and we can do, you know, deals with landlords, etc. So, yeah, we're very happy with our current footprint in Ireland.
Yeah, and that's one thing. But, of course, bricks and mortar is no longer the only way you can sell. What happened to you that convinced you you needed to move online and you needed to move online in a big way?
Yeah, it was a very simple incident, actually. It was during the Beast in the East. I had a couple of people over from the UK. We had a meeting on, we'd say, I think it was on the Wednesday. And Wednesday night, the snow came down, the country shut down, and my two lovely ladies were stuck in the in a hotel in Ballincollig. And when I say stuck, they couldn't get out of the hotel. They couldn't fly out. Their flights were cancelled. So myself and my wife wanted to go up and meet with them, make sure they were okay, that they were comfortable, put on our ski gear. And we walked up the Model Farm Road through Ballincollig. And it was the most surreal experience. There wasn't a car on the road. People were building snowmen on the footpaths and in their gardens and in the middle of the street. And as I was walking up, it dawned on me, all my stores were closed. I'm paying, you know, wages. I'm paying rent, rates, service charges. And I wasn't generating any turnover. So as a direct result, I was losing money. I didn't have an online platform. So I couldn't generate anything. So that was it. So it was a eureka moment. I said, that's it. I'm never going to be in this situation again. I went down the route then of literally the next day investigating the costs and the pitfalls and the benefits of building an online platform. And the first one we built was regatta.ie. And we subsequently have added on craghoppers.ie and dare2be.ie because we have the three brands and we haven't looked back since.
So when we've spoken a lot on this podcast with businesses that had to pivot quick and all of a sudden had to develop an online strategy, lots of businesses have started purely from an online perspective. But from that perspective then, were you ready to go when COVID hit? You weren't expecting COVID no more than anyone else, but you were well positioned.
Correct and right. That's very astute. No, my plan originally was to complement the bricks and mortar estate and duplicate my time so that when the shops were closed and I'm at home at 9 o'clock not working, watching the news, that I was generating revenue because there are other people then online looking for product. And then whilst we didn't expect COVID, the upside was the stores were closed again due to government guidelines, and rightly so. And staff were, you know, on PUP, etc. And we didn't want to let anybody go. So our consumers migrated online in their droves.
Yeah.
So, you know, without giving specific numbers, but I would have equated the same level of turnover that I was doing in my stores to online.
Yeah.
Which
so
was
you didn't lose
incredible.
Out at all. Yeah. And because people had no choice. Did it give you a logistical nightmare on the other side then? Because you had to get stock out.
It did. It did. You know, I was trying to pull the stock from the stores. I had store managers in and supervisors, and some of the teams were so obliging and helped me out by coming in and picking and packing orders. But yes, it was a logistical nightmare. But you know, it was a great problem to have. So you know, what's evolved from that is I now need to invest and intend investing on my own Irish-based DC that will do my wholesale fulfillment, my retail replens, and my online fulfillment.
Yeah. So in other words, you sound like a fella who's in expansion mode, and you see very bright lights on the runway ahead of you.
I do indeed. I have to admit, by nature, I'm optimistic anyway. And by virtue of the fact I've got so many years experience in experimenting in different channels and routes to market, I know what works, I know what doesn't work. I'm very aware of my consumer demographic for the three brands that I have, and it gives me confidence to build more routes to market, become more omni-channel, or multi-channel, excuse me. And I think if I use the euphemism or the eulogy or the euphemism of having, you know, you want to buy a pint of Guinness or a Mars bar in any town or village in Ireland, there are probably 10, 12 different points of sale where you can access that product. I want to be the same. I want my consumers to be able to walk into a shop down the street in any town or village in the country or city and be able to access the product. And I think for me, you know, once my consumers have confidence in the brand, they'll buy it online, knowing there's a store down the street, and knowing in the next few months that I, all going well, will have my own DC, and I'll be looking at next day delivery, and in some cases, same day delivery, and I'll be in control of that supply chain from my own DC to the consumer. And I'll also be able to, all going well, because of the, you know, the more global supply chain issues, be able to, you know, plan and plot the critical path to get stock from manufacturers to the warehouse to my consumers.
Now, you see, Brian, I have a problem for you. And I hate to identify problems to a fellow who's in full flow, but you also told me you're hoping to open more stores this year. Are you still putting a bit of faith in the bricks and mortar, even though you know online is more robust, resilient, and being used by the consumer you're trying to get to?
You know what? It's a brilliant predicament, and we could sit and argue or debate it all day long. But I still think as Irish people, we like to meet people. We like to go shopping. You go into any shopping center, and there's people in there. They may be wandering around because it's an experience in shopping centers now. You go in, you do your shopping, you have your coffee. In some places, you might even go to the cinema. Later on, you might have a bite to eat. It's an experience, and we like to be out and about. And on the back of being locked down, I suppose, to a lesser extent, and more recently with COVID, people are getting out and about, and they want to go into the shops. And I am convinced, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, I'm going to continue expanding the bricks and mortar, supported by online, and then bring that right back to my own distribution network. And I think it's a great proposition. I'm confident to invest.
There's brilliant business courses in college, right? But I don't think any of them could have produced the head that has been verbalizing your business journey for the last while. What is your background? How did you end up in clothing retail, number one, and second of all, being able to pivot so quickly?
I suppose it comes back. My dad was a retailer, electrical retailer in Cork. The same gentleman who I just met 10 minutes ago, 84 years of age now, he was a terrific retailer, a terrific salesman, and had a great work ethic, to the extent that when I was a kid, just wasn't even a teenager, he used to drag us out of bed of a Saturday morning, and we'd go into work with him, and we'd be, you know, myself and my two brothers, we, you know, stocking the you know, moving TVs around. It was an electrical business, moving around TVs and fridge freezers, etc. And then when we got our license, we were able to drive, we were doing deliveries. So it was a one-to-one experience with a family who were buying a TV on hire purchase, if you remember that years back.
Oh, yeah. And the never, was, never. You know,
on the never never, and you had to be very courteous, very respectful, because it was a big investment and it was a family event. And that, you know what, all that kind of grounding kind of stuck with me. And his mantra was, listen, if you look after him today, and when that TV needs to be updated or there's an issue with it, they'll be happy to pick the phone up and phone us and say, listen, can you come out and help us out? And if we can keep replicating that time after time after time, his customer base was fixed practically, but they kept coming back. Whereas when we're in Regatta, what I'm doing is I'm taking that, multiplying it, giving a good customer experience as best as we can. I appreciate we're not 100% amazing. I'd love if we were, but nobody is. But I think that's where it comes from. It was just a good work ethic, you know, half a brain cell, and you can follow a P&L and build a P&L, do deals with landlords and with agents. And again, it's all about a bit of courtesy, a bit of respect. And I think you get it back in spades.
Yeah, you didn't lick it off a stone, is what you're telling me. You have to name check your dad now. You've mentioned him. You're going to have to tell us his name.
Yeah, Jim Fox. Jim Fox on Model Farm Road. And he had a shop, Jim Fox Electrical in Ballincollig. And he had a TV shop in Cook Street in Cork.
Okay, well, Jim, good man. You taught him well, and he's gone on to better things. Brian, what's the website if people want to have a look at it?
It's regatta.ie, daretobe.ie, and Craghoppers. RAGHOPPERS.ie.
Executive Director of Regatta Ireland, Brian Fox, fabulous to talk to you. Thank you so much and continued success, sir.
Very much appreciate it. Thanks ever so much, Jonathan. God bless. Take care.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
Now, did you know that a quarter of Ireland's dairy cows are right here in Cork? Of course, everyone knows this county is home to some of the biggest players in the dairy industry, arguably the finest food, but drinks businesses are also hugely important to the local and national economies as well. Our next guest knows how important they are. He's really well placed to talk about the realities facing food, beverage and that whole scene in Cork. Paul Kelly, Director of Food Drink Ireland at IBEC. How are you?
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm very well. Good to talk to you. I didn't realise it was that many, a quarter of Ireland's dairy cows here. And I'm presuming that means that Cork is a pretty significant player in the sector.
It's a massive powerhouse in terms of the dairy industry. We have a big dairy industry overall in Ireland, but certainly Cork is very, very much at the heart of that, and probably the most competitive place to be producing milk. As you said, we've a quarter of the state's dairy cows. So what that means in actual monetary terms is the dairy sector has 3.6 billion euro in economic output. So that's a major contributor to the economy in the county. And you're talking about a lot of really well-known both primary dairy and specialized nutrition processors. So the likes of Dairy Gold, Carberry, Danone, North Cork, they're all operating across the county. So it's not just, you know, concentrated in one area, it's right across the county. And between the manufacturing, the people working at farm level, operating the farms, and then a lot of the indirect services which support the dairy industry, you're talking about 10,000 jobs in total across the county.
Yeah, and that's just huge when you were to think about it that way. I think Apple is 6,500, and we always think of that as the biggest employer, but food and beverage, it really outshines that. And we're a huge contributor as well to the drink sector. We have a brewery, at least one. We have many small breweries, many, many. And we have the biggest whiskey distillery in the country.
Yeah, Irish Distillers in Midleton. And obviously, I think your listeners would be really, really familiar with a lot of their brands, Jameson, Redbreast, Midleton, Very Rare, and so on. So they do a huge amount of both production and exports globally to right around the world from Midleton. So it's the largest distillery in Ireland. But then in addition to Irish Distillers operating there, we're now starting to see that the rise of a number of sort of craft producers, sort of like the Clonakilty Distillery, Sales Spirits Company, and so on. So I think you're seeing the mix from the large to the small, and again spread across the entire county from east to west.
The lazy economist will always say the arrival of big players or dominant players sees the squeezing out of the smaller in the sector. That hasn't been the case. I mean, if anything, having big players in the county has inspired others. I know, look, it was an easy thing to make gin years ago, but we're making a lot more whiskey. Look at the cheeses that we're making. Look at the other dairy products that are high value, small operations, but high value. It's a real healthy ecosystem right now.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I think whilst dairy and whiskey are probably the two sort of biggest high profile sectors from a business perspective, you know, Cork County, not just the city, but the entire county has got a huge reputation both nationally and internationally for its food culture. And that food culture manifests itself, you know, from the restaurants through to other aspects of hospitality. But from our own sort of point of view within the food industry, there's a huge artisan food base across the county as well. And those artisan food producers are supplying really high quality uniquely unique product, not just to the restaurants, but also to companies around the rest of the country. And some of them are actually exporting as well. And I think there's also that, you know, sort of tourism infrastructure piece as well, that in addition to sort of the wonderful sites of the county, there's a lot of people being attracted to Cork, not just for the restaurants, but to actually go and see these artisan food producers as well.
Businesses have been paralyzed by a number of things. They kept producing. It was great. And speaking to any food producer, it's actually been as busy as it's ever been. They had ups and downs and peaks and troughs, but everyone's busy, which is great. COVID was a huge concern. Brexit, exporting to the UK or maybe importing some materials, that was a concern. You know, they've been through a fairly torrid time, but it's probably made these businesses a little more resilient, Paul.
Yeah, look, I mean, certainly the food and drink sector is the largest of the indigenous sectors that we have in Ireland. And, it's constantly facing crises. We had sort of the big downturn 10 years ago, and that was actually preceded in the food industry by a big dip in the value of sterling, which really affected our exports. And then more recently, we've had Brexit, which is still working its way through the system. COVID, obviously, over the last 2 years. And the entire food chain actually managed to stay producing and putting food on the table for consumers right across the county and right across the country all through the pandemic and still continues to do it. So, you know, really, really resilient. But the big issue, I think, for us, and certainly we haven't been distracted by either Brexit or COVID, is sustainability. It's the big one in the food industry. It's what consumers are demanding, both at home and overseas markets. And that really would be the number one priority for the industry at the moment, to make sure that the production processes and the raw material sourcing is as sustainable as it can be.
The sustainability thing, it's like a horse creeping up on the inside rail, isn't it, that's about to overtake all of the other problems. Are businesses taking it seriously enough in food and beverage, Paul?
Most of them are taking it really, really seriously. It's probably the number one strategic imperative for them. And certainly we'd be saying to any company which isn't looking at sustainability, and not just climate change, but wider sustainability, things like the circular economy, the types of sustainable packaging that you're using. If a company isn't doing that, they really, really need to get on the case pretty quickly. You know, we've got a lot of sort of national and European policy and legislation in this space, but ultimately the consumer is really starting to demand this from their food producers at the moment.
And one of the things that IBEC does, of course, is supporting businesses on that journey and getting the kind of help that they need and the experience of others to help them make the right decisions. Your new office in Cork, very shiny and odd as it is, probably going to be busier over the course of the next few weeks. You're encouraging food and beverage organisations, particularly the ones who haven't gotten involved yet, to contact you.
Absolutely. So look, I mean, as trade associations, either as the specific food and drink sector or more widely as IBEC, we do a number of things. One, obviously, is we represent business at overall level or at sectoral level. So we sort of engage with the government and the state agencies and so on and make sure that industry's voice is heard. Secondly, we provide information to members to help them run their business on things like, say, food regulation, wider legislation, sustainability issues and so on. But the third thing that we do, both as overall IBEC and as individual business sectors like Food Drink Ireland, is we're networks. And, you know, those networks either operate in a physical sense through meetings or more commonly over the last 21 months or thereabouts with the pandemic online. And those networks are really good to allow businesses to share information, to share best practice, and really to assist them and assist each other in terms of meeting objectives around sustainability or Brexit or COVID or whatever the business issue of the day actually is.
All right, Paul Kelly, Director of Food and Drink Ireland at IBEC. Thank you so much for joining us on Red Business, Paul.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
Now, if you are a owner of a business in Cork or you work for some of the biggest businesses in Cork, you need to listen very closely to our next guest. The Cork Chamber Cork Company of the Year Awards have been launched, and you have until Monday, the 7th of February, to get your application in. It's the 24th year of the awards. They celebrate the best of Cork business, whether they're new or emerging or major international companies. It's something that's been my distinct pleasure to be involved with in the awards in previous years. Fingers crossed this year we might actually have an award ceremony in person, but more on that anon. But first of all, CEO of Cork Chamber, Conor Healy, how are you?
Hello, Jonathan. I'm very well, thank you.
This is great. First of all, that it's coming back. COVID be damned. You're going ahead with the awards, and you need people to put the applications in now.
Well, absolutely. And we ran the awards very successfully last year, and with the award ceremony held online. And we're hoping this year that we may be able to do it in person. But for now, the focus is on launching the awards, encouraging everybody to consider applying for those awards. It's really, really important to recognize the success, I suppose, the resilience that there's been over the last number of years, and also the innovation and focus on sustainability that so many businesses have. So, as you say, these awards have been running now, they're into their 24th year. We have fantastic awards partners with Vodafone Ireland, and obviously our media partners, the Irish Examiner as well, are a huge support. So we've just launched the awards. Applications are open, and we're encouraging everybody to have a look at that up to the closing date of the 7th of February.
Now, they are normally held, of course, in conjunction with the big dinner in City Hall. That's been on the back burner because of COVID, but it hasn't dampened the spirit of the companies putting in. In fact, last year, what struck me was it was more competitive than ever, despite the pandemic.
Well, we had a fantastic application last year, and a really difficult job as a group of judges to shortlist initially, and then to select the winners. And we had some, you know, fantastic winners last year in the emerging category. Altada, who went on to have a huge year in the interim. The SME winner last year was Granite. You had Zeit in the large, and the international company winner was Eli Lilly, who also won the overall Cork Company of the Year award. So the entry levels last year, the standard was exceptional, and we ended up with some fantastic winners. But you know, it's not all about the winning either, Jonathan. It really is about the participation. And what we find is that businesses that enter and that compete, they actually learn an awful lot in terms of their own organizations. It asks themselves some questions that maybe they need to address in their businesses, and the profile that the businesses receive once they get particularly into the shortlist phase is of huge value to them. So you know, while ultimately there is a winner of the awards across the various categories, you know, the participation and being involved in the selection process brings huge benefits to those organizations.
Yeah, being a judge is a very difficult job, and you have to take on that job every year. Let's try and make it easy for you, Conor. What do businesses need to do to make sure that their entry ticks all the boxes?
Well, firstly, John, just to remind people in terms of the categories, we have the emerging category, which is for, you know, high growth and high potential companies who are less than 4 years old, pretty much across any sector. We're really looking to see, you know, a new innovative business, a new innovative approach, and, you know, businesses that have real potential to grow into the future. The SME category is for businesses with less than 75 employees, and you know, that's been a hugely competitive category over the last number of years, and it is open to businesses across, be it from startup all the way through to well established. So we've seen, you know, new businesses all the way through to very long historic businesses in Cork competing in that category as well. And it is all about looking at, particularly in terms of those businesses who have been around for a number of years, you know, the innovation, how they've continued to thrive, and what's driven their success. The large category is for businesses of more than 75 employees. And then we're looking there, particularly in the context of the sustainability of those businesses, the impact they're making on the Cork economy. And again, there's always really, really great stories coming across in that category. And finally, in the international, is open to businesses who have a particularly international focus. Quite often the FDI sector are in the final running across that particular category, but not exclusively. Our indigenous sector, where they have international operations and have strong international markets, are key contributors to that category as well. And there we're looking for businesses who are, you know, particularly focused on the growth of their companies, how they're dealing with the current issues of the day, how they're dealing with sustainability. And then we're looking for businesses that are really supporting their people well, whether it's in terms of diversity, equality, inclusion, and so on. So we have a wide, you know, area of focus across the awards. There's something there for every business has an opportunity to identify an area that they can contribute and to enter, and we very much encourage those entries now.
So the 7th of February is the closing date, and all the details are up in corkchamber.ie, is that right?
Absolutely, corkchamber.ie for any details, and absolutely anyone to make direct contact with the Chamber as well if they need any further information.
Now, I would love nothing more than to be standing on a stage shushing the good people of Cork, as is my wont during the Chamber dinner every year. The question, Conor, and you don't have an answer to this yet, is will there be an in-person event this year?
Well, we very much hope so, Jonathan. Obviously, things are moving in the right direction as I speak to you today, and we're awaiting some government announcements. So, look, the hope is that we'll see significant improvement over the next number of weeks, which will give everybody an opportunity to get back out, to start engaging on an in-person basis. And for us, our hope would be very much that we can run an in-person Chamber annual dinner this year.
Oh, wouldn't it be great? Absolutely brilliant to be back in that room again. Conor Healy, Chief Executive of Cork Chamber. Best of luck to everyone who's entering. Thanks for talking to us, Conor.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
And that's it from this episode of Red Business. Thanks so much for listening. Ciara McDonough was the producer. Don't forget, we've got a brand new video series that's running on redfm.ie, Red Business in Focus. The latest interview is a fascinating one with Marie Toft, who tells us about her new business. But that's it from the podcast for now. We'll catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.